iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patti and I'm joined today by Jakob Kotan. And Jakob Kotan is from Garner and Hancock Solicitors based in Isleworth. He is a partner in a private client department and he deals with trusts, powers of attorney, wills and probate matters as well. And much of the work that Jakob does has cross-border elements, which is one of the things we're going to be talking about today. Now, this could mean that people no longer live in England or have assets in various countries where they live or when they die, for instance. And also, Jakob also acts as a professional attorney and deputy for vulnerable individuals when they don't have a family or anyone else close to them or look after them in relation to finances and health. In addition, he also acts as a professional trustee in several trusts, often dealing with funds for vulnerable individuals. He read law at Sussex University many, many years ago. Not that many years ago, but many years ago. And he's also a keen golfer as well. And he joins us today with his wealth of wisdom and information that he's going to be sharing with us today. Jakob, a very warm welcome to you and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Lovely to be with you here.
Thank you so much. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about today was not only inheritance tax planning, particularly if you're living or working abroad, but also estate planning for cross-border families as well. Now, it is the case, and particularly for our audience, the Indian audience who've lived and worked abroad in India, in Africa and various other states, they still have property abroad or they have property over here or have moved abroad. And it's an area which is not well known about, not spoken about, and still a pretty much a grey area for a lot of people. And then they don't really understand the taxation side of things, the trustee side of things, or the financial aspects of it. It's a huge subject. So where do we stand on that then, Jakob? Help us out, please.
It is a huge subject. And I don't know where to start, because you just mentioned this. I think what we should start with is to say, oh, people may have assets abroad because yes. They choose to have them. So I choose to buy a property somewhere.
Yes.
Whether it's a villa in Spain or a house in India, it doesn't really matter. Or opening a bank account somewhere. Investing shares in stock exchanges in foreign countries, those are foreign assets. So we choose to make those investments for whatever reason. So that's one of the aspects of it. Second is that we don't choose to make those investments, but they happen to then become ours, perhaps through somebody dying who holds assets abroad, and passing those assets on to us this way. So we didn't never intended to have them, but Now we've got them abroad. So these are sort of, you can call yourself lucky if you come across a large asset abroad from a family member or otherwise.
It's a nice windfall to have.
So this is how it can happen to you. And from then, the potential problems can develop.
Okay, so when we look at getting this wonderful windfall that you speak of, in which jurisdiction should a cross-border estate be administered then when it comes to perhaps grant of representation or if two grants are required? Where do we stand with jurisdiction on this, please, Jakob?
So, that's really important. Right, so let's just start with something relatively straightforward.
Okay.
So let's just say that John, a British citizen who lived in England, died, and he had an asset in England and abroad, be it India or be it Paris, it doesn't matter. Well, actually, it does. But perhaps that's a good example. I'll explain why. So generally, what we need to do is to deal with those assets separately in all of these jurisdictions. Mm. The countries, the state authorities in these various countries won't really care what you had elsewhere unless you can show what you've any sort of a document proving that you can administer the estate locally.
Okay.
So generally, you would go from one court to another in those jurisdictions applying for grants of probate, or what we in England, what we know as a grant of probate, and then administering the estate in those various countries, always with the local grant of probate. So doing nothing often when you've got these properties is the sort of the first step to a mess when you pass away.
Okay, so this is where jurisdiction comes in. So when we look at a grant of representation or two, where does that stand when it comes to jurisdiction and cross-border estate administration? Because like when we started, it's a bit of a grey area, it's a huge subject, but not enough understanding around it. So what is grant of representation exactly?
So a grant of representation, and you quite rightly identify this by this expression, because this is the correct one, is the right issued by a court in England, for instance, if we apply in England, to administer somebody's estate.
Ah, okay.
So the court agrees with somebody who applies that they are the right person to do it. They either are going to be named in somebody's will, in the deceased person's will, and therefore they will say to the court, look, my name is in the will, and therefore it should be me who administers the estate.
Indeed.
Or there's no will because the person died without leaving one, and then it will be the rules of intestacy which kick in and decide who is to administer the estate. So what sort of relative is suitable to be the first in line to ask for the grants to be issued?
Log on to iglobalnews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iglobalnews.com. And we are talking with Jakob Kotan from Garner & Hancock Solicitors today, and we're talking about estate planning in a different country and how you should go about planning and making sure that the future is secure. And you just mentioned, Jakob, that you've talked about intestacy. First of all, let's just understand, what is intestacy?
So intestacy is when I die without making a will.
Okay.
So I don't get to decide what happens to my estate. The law decides for me. And the law decides for me, and it all depends on my personal circumstances. Hmm. So if I leave a child, something may happen. If I leave a child and a spouse, it will get split between the two of them in a proportion. If I leave... Okay. No child, no spouse, then who gets it then? This is how the law determines who gets my estate if I do not make a will and instruct my executor how to distribute it. So okay. This is what...
Yeah, I understand that, Jakob. So in a cross-border estate, which is essentially what we're talking about today, which rules imply in terms of intestacy? Are there any differences?
So let's, again, for the simplicity, let's assume we're talking about John, who lived in England. Mm. If John makes no will and he leaves a property, again, in England and somewhere else, then the English rules of intestacy will apply to the English asset and potentially to the asset abroad, but those may conflict with those local rules. If you go to the foreign court and say, this is what I'd like to happen to the property, the court may say, no, no, no. Our rules say something else. And that's where you leave the person dealing with your estate in quite a pickle. You then need to work out what may happen to the property and what relatives may waive their rights to the property and so on. So it's so important. It's absolutely critical to make a will if you've got assets all over the place. In fact, it's important to make a will full stop.
That's a really crucial thing to learn today. Say, for instance, that our listeners may have a property back in India. They've moved over here years ago, grown up in this country, and become very much British citizens. However, they still have a property back home in India, which is either occupied or unoccupied, and they want to state a claim on it. How would they go about doing that?
The rules of intestacy, or the application of a will, would apply in India as much as it applies in here.
I see.
The way you actually go to court and apply for the grant is slightly different. But if you are able to claim rights to a property, even if the deceased died somewhere else and you live somewhere else, those rights don't disappear. You are able to go to the court in India or appoint a lawyer who will apply and then get access to those assets. Getting access to liquid assets like bank accounts is often a lot easier than dealing with houses and other properties. That's when it gets a bit tricky.
Indeed.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iGlobalNews.com. We are talking with Jakob Kontan from Garner & Hancock Solicitors, based in Isleworth, and today we're talking about cross-border residencies, and we're talking about the law surrounding that. And when we talk about cross-border real estate, it's an interesting subject, but a huge subject to talk about. And so far, we've got some fantastic information shared with us from Jakob today. Jakob, I wanted to ask you, what about the spouse's legal rights to share, and what about the rights of children when it comes to cross-border estates? Where do we stand with that? Because I'm just wondering if there are any other claims against the state that we might be considering or not talked about so far.
That's, again, good question, Tony. I don't know whether the question relates to testacy or intestacy, but let's just stick with the intestacy principle.
Okay.
So if I have properties in various countries, those rules may be different. And you said, where do my children and my spouse stand if I die without making a will? Or if I die even making a will, but the will contradicts the local rules somewhere else. It may be that my will, if I have a property, again, let's use France, and I've got nothing against France, by the way. It's an example. It's nearby.
Yes, yes.
As an example, those local rules may contradict what I've put in my will. And in France, it's not a court, but it's a notary public,
yeah,
which would make a notarial deed. And they may disregard what I have in my will from England if I'm not careful in drafting it, and just distribute the estate in accordance with the local rules in France.
Okay.
And if they do that, the worst thing is it could mean that I pay more tax on my inheritance tax on my properties.
I see.
Or the deceased estate. So it could get really tricky and expensive if neglected.
Interesting. So let's just talk about then, when we talk about the estate and passing on of the estate, the taxation side of things, Is there such a thing as taxation treaty, taxation based on location of property, or even domicile and tax as well? Where do we stand with that, Jakob?
Again, this is just so broad to talk about tax. Yes, of course, there are several treaties.
Yes.
But they tend to be slightly redundant when it comes to inheritance tax. Again, we're talking about tax on somebody's death.
Mm.
There's one sort of important exception. Australia does not have inheritance tax, and many other countries have like really nominal amounts of tax. But let's just, again, go back to this example of John, who lived in England, is an English citizen, yes, and just happens to have an asset abroad. If I have an asset abroad and I am domiciled in England, HMRC will tax all of my estate, regardless of the way it is. It's only when it's proven that I was not domiciled in England, then only those assets based in England will get taxed to HMRC. So again, getting these things right ahead, if I've been living somewhere, makes things easier. Perhaps having wills drawn up before somebody dies, where you actually mention this and give indications as to where about your whereabouts. That's quite important again. And I don't mean to use this your podcast as a platform to tell people what they should do, but I'm just saying I've seen it so many times, and I do deal with estates where I've got at the moment a property in Canada, a property near Liverpool, and investments in Isle of Man. And we've got wills in all three jurisdictions, and we need to make it happen. And that's the prepared one. So it can get really expensive for those relatives who are misfortunate enough to lose somebody who they loved and now having to deal with their assets.
Indeed, and so is the case then, as you quite rightly say, to get professional advice, such as the sort of advice you're sharing with us today. We are talking with Jakob Kontan from Garner and Hancock Solicitors today, and we're talking about cross-border estates, owning the state, and even wills and trusts when it comes down to it. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Jakob, was the domicile of dependency. And in this particular case, a child's domicile is its domicile of dependency. How does that work? Because there's a lot of people who are living in this country, and I gave you an example that back home in India and Africa, from our backgrounds, there are properties which have been owned by our parents, relatives, or even grandparents. They've passed away. We happen to be the next in line. But we've been living in this country and we don't know the laws. So how does the domicile of dependency work? And what's the sort of like description around that, if you like?
Yeah, it's a relatively archaic concept.
Okay.
It's linked to the to your father's origin or the person's father. And it's luckily it only applies during a minority. So during somebody's minority, they are linked to a particular domicile of their particular parent. But the concept of domicile status, I think I'm just going to develop on this, which will give a bit more understanding to it, hopefully, although it is quite complex. So I'd like to compare the domicile status to residency status.
Okay.
So I think that residency is much easier to understand. If somebody is a tax resident of a country, then generally they spend the majority of their life in that country.
Mm.
And that's it. So they pay tax somewhere and they're considered the resident somewhere. Of course, there's some other smaller rules that may apply, but this is the general concept. The concept of domicile, it's a mixture of various elements. One of them, you said, oh, I am domiciled where my father was. Like, how is that relevant? I may not be living at the same place, yet during my minority, this may be the case. And then we've got other elements that come into it. My past couple of decades of my life, what did I do? Where do I holiday? Where do I, what? Who do I consider myself be? What is my citizenship? So all this is put in the mix, and then your domicile comes up, and you either are domiciled in England, therefore you pay taxes on all your assets regardless to where they are.
Yeah.
Or you can convince HMRC that the deceased was not domiciled in the UK, and in fact, I have done it several times. It is quite a long process, and HMRC often do not want to agree with you that what you're saying is true. So you need to present evidence. So if somebody's lived somewhere else and worked somewhere else for long enough, you may be able to prove that they've been domiciled somewhere else, and therefore their assets should not be taxed by HMRC, but only those based in England, not other assets outside.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
When we speak about grants and grants of probate, then moving on, Jacob, how does one go about submitting an application for a grant of probate which will confirm the authority to administer the estate in the UK? How do we go about doing that?
Okay. UK, that's, again, relatively straightforward. And, of course, we understand the legal system. I can then share an experience from France when I had to sit in front of a notary public for 3 hours being spoken to in French and translated the same by a court translator.
Goodness.
To do a notarial deed. By the end, I was so confused, I'd finished the job, but it was quite tiring.
A difficult process, yeah. Yeah, understood, yeah.
In England, we make an application. There's quite a formal sort of procedure, various forms, depending whether it's taxable or not. So the submission could be 10 pages or it could be 100 pages, depending where we stand with various elements, where the assets are, how much tax we pay, whether we're proving domicile or not.
Yeah.
So we need to inform HMRC and inform the court. And if the court is happy with what we've produced and happy with the tax we've paid, if we're paying tax, then they will issue a grant of probate, which gives the person named as the executor or person representative, gives them the right to deal with the deceased's assets and liabilities.
Thank you for listening to iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com.
Jacob Kotan, you are a senior member at Garner and Hancock Solicitors, and today we discussed cross-border estates and making sure that we get professional advice when it comes to dealing with cross-border estates, and certainly wills and trusts comes into the equation here as well. So people want to get in touch with you and find out more about how to deal with their estates and property abroad. What's the call to action and how can people get in touch with you?
Of course, they can go on our website, which is www.garner-hancock.co.uk. They can telephone our offices, and I hope I remember the number by heart. It's 0208-232-9560, I believe. Or they can email me, but all the details will be on the website. And then what we normally do, we tend to pick up inquiries and discuss with potential clients what their issues may be. That's a free consultation, you can call it this way. And then we arrange an appointment to take a more detailed instructions and advice on costs and timeline, that sort of thing, what you would expect from a solicitor.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.